Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
I should have known. Oh, my God, I should have known.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Jim, here we are on the writer's block.
How many birthdays is that, Bobby Jean?
Today is our fifth birthday. We premiered this show on exactly May 21st. 2015. This is week number 258. Can you believe it?
Yes. Yes, we did. And who'd have thunk it?
A dream come true. You are listening to The Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. With our man of the hour, our host, Jim Christina, and I'm co-host Bobby Jean Bell, and we are so happy that you joined us tonight. Jim, you want to say a little something about the show and our 5 years?
I do. Well, right now, it's like it reminds me of an old Paul Lind little thing that he used to do, and it was like a little yellow bird sat on the sill in my hospital room. Cheer up, cheer up. You haven't got long. So, when we first put together this show 5 years ago, or actually a little over 5 years ago, we never dreamed it would do what it has done. That is the God's truth.
No, you had a concept and you had a dream and
right. You
put it in place.
But I never dreamed it would go for 5 years.
Yeah.
We're already probably 2 years over the norm on most radio shows as far as how long they last.
And we have guests booked almost to the end of this year and
exactly.
easily into next year. And so
exactly.
The Writer's Block hosted by LA Talk Radio. Aren't we thrilled to be on LA Talk Radio? What an amazing
station. Well, we are.
Station.
I just have to say, and then I want to cut loose and listen live, but LA Talk Radio has been so good to us with Sam Hassan and with Ronan Rosner, our engineer, who stuck with us through thick and thin every week, through all our foibles and our mistakes and hanging up on guests. And he always manages to get them back. And God bless you, Ronan. And of course to Creative Edge, who has been a great sponsor of our show, and to the ex-sponsors of our show that have gone by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you, Bobby Jean, and you've just added so much to the show.
Oh, thank you.
who can say enough about, well, okay, I'm going to go ahead and do it. Who can say enough about Richard Polinelli?
And I hear him laughing. Richard, why don't you come on in?
I do too.
Get in the love fest here.
I was supposed to be the relief pitcher. I didn't realize I was coming in to start the game here, guys.
Well, Richard, you jumped in when you needed to, and you did a good job.
Well, thank you,
sir. And we do miss you. And of course, it's brought about other stuff with you and I, and with the Writer's Block. And so, I mean, you know, you're still part of the family.
Absolutely. Well, I've been around for four. It's my fourth anniversary was last month of being on the show.
There you go. So
it has been an incredible 4 years of being involved in this show and in other projects with you and Bobby Jean and the Cowboy Festival, those 2 years out there in California. So it's been an amazing time. And I sure hope we got another 5 years to go.
Yeah.
Oh, I think so. And I have to say that I think that there's no other radio show that can come close to what we do on the show with writers and authors and playwrights and songwriters. And I just don't think there is. So with that being said, I would like to say hello to our evening's guest, if you wouldn't mind.
Great. Jason.
Mr. Step- Lavelle.
Mr. Stephon. There you go.
Hello, Jason. I am alive and kicking.
I'm doing great.
Well, I'm wonderful. I've been in the hospital since Sunday, so I'm in peak condition, as you can tell.
Yeah. Well, you always are.
Yeah, right. So anyway, I want you guys to just kick back and relax and have a good show. I'm going to listen off the air. If you got anything to say to me, go ahead and say it. I'll be listening. But other than that, congratulations, Bobby, on a five-year run, a great five-year run.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Ronan and Sam and Richard and everybody who's a fit. Oh, and Russ.
Russ, yes.
Who's
yes,
been
yes.
around since day one. And yes. Henry and
Henry
Court.
Yep, we would definitely want to make sure that Russ Avison and Henry Park, and what would we do without the bookie? Oh my gosh,
I know. And the bookie has kept us on the air, and that's the truth.
Yep, and kudos to Bob Brill, who also has been a wonderful co-host at different times. This team has been an amazing team, and that's what we are. We're a team. So, yeah.
Yep. Okay, well, that being said, I'm going to kick off. I'm going to go in and listen live.
Okay.
So y'all have a great show, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
So Jason, goodbye. Richard, bye. Ronan, ciao. And everybody have a good time.
All right.
Thanks so much, Jim.
All right.
So we have on the air Richard Polinelli, a past co-host and an author, and our guest Jason Lavelle. And let me tell you a little bit about Jason. He is an author and photographer from West Michigan. And when he's not spending time with his beautiful wife and four children, he doesn't look old enough to have four children, Lavelle works at a veterinary clinic helping animals of all kinds. With two pugs, Dragon and Mr. Sparkles, Maria the Chihuahua, and an annoying dachshund lady, Lavelle pretty much lives in a zoo. After playing with pugs and tucking the kids into bed, he ventures down into the basement where their tortoiseshell cat, Leah, a demonic muse, whispers in their ear, forcing them to scribble out the madness infesting their mind and pouring out paranormal worlds from deep within the void. Please welcome Jason Lavelle. We're so happy to have you with us, Jason.
Hi, guys. It's great to be here. I have to tell you, from that description, this Jason Lavelle sounds pretty dramatic. It really does.
Well, you know, after reading a few more of the stories in the book, A Flutter of Darkness, that we're going to talk about, you know, the story that I just finished reading like an hour ago, now I understand the veterinary connection, because that story, The Life of Pets. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was probably the most twisted out of the bunch, I would have to say.
Oh my gosh. Well, as I wrote quickly when I put a Facebook post together yesterday, you are a writer that gets the reader's heart a flutter, makes us skip a beat, and literally pound until we're sweating. So Would you please tell us a little bit about A Flutter of Darkness, maybe how that title came about and what a reader might expect to find?
Yeah, I sure will. And, you know, first I want to tell you that I'm in Michigan, so it's late here. It's dark here. And yeah. I'm actually in my backyard right now in my hammock, you know, staring up at the trees in the sky. And I've got the tree frogs that are bellowing, or whatever you call that noise, very loudly. And it's just, it's this really kind of spooky, cool vibe. I was like, oh, yes, this is perfect for talking about a horror novel. I love that. So A Flutter of Darkness. I'll tell you what, I really started writing short stories when I was in my 20s, back in the college days. And, you know, they never really went anywhere. I never tried to go anywhere with them. I never tried to have those published. And so they just kind of collected, and every once in a while I'd add another very strange story to it. And then a few years back, I started actually selling them to different magazines that were looking for, you know, creepy stuff that I enjoy writing. And so I'd sell them here and there, and it was great. And but, you know, some of my, you know, well, a couple of my writer role models growing up were Stephen King and Clive Barker, you know, these guys who created these masterful collections of horror. And they were short stories and novellas. And I was like, you know, I really want to put something like that together. So that's kind of how the idea behind Flutter started, to get all these stories in one place. But as far as the title goes, you know, people think it's such a goofy title because A Flutter of Darkness, not only does it not really make a whole lot of sense, but it doesn't sound terribly frightening. So we'll kind of go into it a little bit here. You know, a flutter is a gathering of butterflies. Okay, you know, butterflies, you know, these cute, beautiful creatures, and you know, when I'm thinking of things, now I'm a person who has a lot of anxiety, and I'm a very attention deficit disorder person. My thoughts tend to really race, and they're very fleeting, and it's really difficult for me to pick out an idea from my mind and start writing. That's my biggest challenge, really. And when I see these ideas for a story, it's almost like you're looking into this black background, you know, a dark sky, and then you just see this little light kind of flicker by or flutter by. And that's why I got this idea of, oh, they're kind of like butterflies, you know, they seem like they're right there. They'd be easy to reach out and grab, but they just flicker away. And the darkness of you know, well, for me, it was obvious, you know, these are all very, very dark stories. Even the stories that aren't, you know, straight up horror, they have quite a bit of darkness in it. So that's where the title came from, A Flutter of Darkness. And one thing that a lot of people don't know is that these beautiful butterflies that you see out there, they don't just feed on flowers. They don't just eat nectar. Some of them will land on carrion, dead animals, or dead people, perhaps. Other ones will feed on poop that's on the ground, you know. So, you know, not all butterflies, even though they look beautiful, they're not always doing beautiful things. So that's kind of the idea behind the collection.
When you put the collection together, because some are short, some are longer, and this might be helpful to someone who does write short stories, how did you determine the order? The order that they appear in, is that an order that they came to your mind, or did you orchestrate, like putting a CD together, you know, what order to put the songs in? Did you orchestrate how to put them together in that order?
Great question, for which I have a very unsatisfying answer. the answer is that the publisher did it for me.
Oh.
And what they actually told me is that they tried to order it in a way that it felt more rhythmic for the reader, to where I wasn't just hitting them with all really hard and heavy stuff every story. So that's the explanation they gave me. But yeah, so that's the very unsatisfying answer to a good question, is the publisher did it for me.
Richard, do you want to get in here and have a question or two for Jason?
Well, he kind of set me up for a question because he mentions his publisher had set the order. I'm looking at the cover for A Flutter of Darkness. Uh-huh. And, you know, the blurb was butterflies and stories, you know, around butterflies. And that cover has no butterflies on it. So I'm curious, why did they explain why they went with the image that they used?
Well, that one actually I have a good answer for. That cover, I came up with, I worked with an independent artist, and this was several years ago, back when I first had the idea that, okay, this is going to be a collection. I want to do this. And working with this artist, his name is Artie Cabrera, we came up with the cover design because I just really like the flaming skull images. I'm into skulls. That's one of my things. So we came up with that cover, and it was, you know, it was another 2 years before, you know, the publisher took it on, and we decided to, you know, embrace the butterfly theme a little bit more, you know, with the within the pages of the, or within the interior of the book with the graphics in there and things like that. So, so, you know, the cover was more just something that, you know, I thought it had a really cool feel to it, even though it didn't have anything to do with butterflies.
Well, it's an outstanding cover because mm-hmm. it definitely gets your attention and you're wanting to know, you know, how this connects to the title. So, I mean, it definitely, as I was scrolling through some of the books on your Amazon page, that one really stands out. So mm-hmm. that concept really works.
Well, and I appreciate that. You know, I am a firm believer in the cover needs to really represent what's inside the book. And so when you look at the cover for Flutter Up Darkness, which is this, you know, really foreboding flaming skull with the creepy spine coming out of it. You know, you know that you're going to get into something that's horror, and you know, that's what I want people to know. You know, these stories are, you know, while some of them are not, you know, terribly graphic, and it's not really slasher mm-hmm. Type horror, there are some very, very dark themes in here, mm-hmm. And things that I wouldn't want someone who's not comfortable with hard, dark themes to pick up, because some of them might be very triggering for someone that has any type of, you know, mental health issue dealing with some of the subject matter. So mm-hmm. I wanted to be very clear. This is hard stuff you're getting into here. It's not going to be pretty.
Another thing that struck me, you know, if you're looking at art, sometimes you might look at the piece of art first and then go up and look at the title or the label copy that goes along with it. Or you may look at the label first and then look at the art and try to see the connection. I found that titles to your stories, especially like the first two or three, then I began to get a little on your brainwave, which was a bit disconcerting for me.
I'm sorry.
But I found the titles to be so interesting. And I'll just give, for instance, Keep Rolling. You know, I didn't really know what that was going to mean. And then pretty quickly in that story, I figured that out. Tell me a little about the title. Did the title come to you first? The title, you know, tell me how the titles come about. Because they're really good. The way you name them is really good.
I like this question. This is good, you know, and I don't put a lot of thought into this question, really. But, you know, there are some where there's a story in there called The Life of Pets.
Yeah.
And that one, the title did come first on that one. You know, and there are others where as I'm going, all of a sudden it'll pop into my head when I'm writing, you know, page three of the story. And I'm like, okay, I've got to make sure that there's a moment in this story where all of a sudden it's like, boom, that clicks. Whereas in Keep Rolling, it's not until the last page. But thankfully, that's a very short story. So, you know, it's funny with titles, though, is because, you know, you'll be, you know, like I am right now, laying in the hammock looking at the dark sky, and I might have a thought that, oh, that'd be a really wicked thing to call a book, and I'll keep that, and I'll kind of lock that away. You know, I'll grab that little butterfly out of the sky, and later on, I'll try to develop it into something. And, you know, the story, The Life of Pets, you know, eventually we were going to get into some of these stories, and this is actually what I wanted to talk about, because it is... it is a very disturbing story, and it's a story that actually means a lot to me because I do work in a veterinary clinic. I do a little bit of everything there. You know, I do admin stuff, I do reception stuff, I work as a tech, I work in the kennels, and so I have seen every bit of what happens in a veterinary clinic. And when we're there, we are there to help animals. However, we also have to serve the clients, and those are the masters of those animals, the owners. And when it comes down to it, it's what the owner wants that goes. And the animals really don't have any kind of say in what we're doing whatsoever. And if you really think about some of the things that happens when you bring you know, Fido or Milo or whatever animal you have into your vet's office. Think about some of the things the vet techs and the vets actually do to your animal, mm-hmm. how they touch your animal. Mm-hmm. You know, the animals can't give us consent. You know, we may stick a rectal thermometer in them and we don't care. It means mm-hmm. nothing to us. But if that were to happen to a human, you know, that would be a big deal. So that story, The Life of Pets, was a way for me to try to reconcile some of the things that we do, but by putting my own twist on it, by making this veterinary clinic, you know, a clinic that serves humans, for humans. And so it's and in the end, I didn't end up reconciling anything. I just ended up hurting myself.
Well, it brings up a lot of things to. As a reader, it is very dark, of course, and with engaging characters and an engaging situation that I think also makes one ponder. I think you can't be human and not read that story. You're either going to say, I can't read this story and pass it, or you're going to say, oh, and you're going to be thoughtful. It's going to cause you to be thoughtful. Because you bring up a lot of different things in that story. It's a very texture-full story.
Well, thank you. And that's really all I want is to get under people's skin a little bit and make them think about something. And I never feel offended if someone says, you know, I have to pass on a particular story because it's troubling to me or it's triggering to me because I understand. I have my own triggers, things that I don't want to read about. As I already mentioned, I have a lot of anxiety, so I don't hold that against people. But you know, I do want them to think a little bit that, you know, yes, this is fiction. Yes, this is meant to entertain you, but there are some little nuggets of truth in here, and there mm-hmm. are some things that might be worth pondering as you go about your day-to-day life and as you interact with other people.
Hold that thought. And Ronan, can we hear a little bit about LA Talk Radio? I'm hoping.
Hey there, J. Michael here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, while you're on furlough or just playing staying home because of the coronavirus, if you're working at home, what better way to pass your day than to tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to some of our fine broadcasting during the day. We have a lot to offer. We have a lot on the air, so give us a listen. Right now, we've got one of your favorites. LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and it's coming at you right now. So kick back, relax, and enjoy.
And you are listening to LA Talk Radio and The Writer's Block, and we're chatting with just a tremendous writer, Jason Lavelle, and also on the line, another equally talented writer and friend of ours to the show, Richard Polinelli. Richard, why don't you go ahead, and I'm sure you've got some things you'd like to chat with Jason about.
Yeah, I want to touch on what we were talking about right before the break, where he said there were things he wanted the readers to start thinking about. He wanted to kind of get under their skin mm-hmm. a little bit. And mm-hmm. as writers, that's kind of our goal when we write any work of fiction, is we want that work to make a connection with the reader. So what I wanted to ask him is, do you ever get, say, like an email or something on social media from someone who's read something you've written and it has really impacted them in a very profound way?
You know, not over the internet, I haven't. I've actually had personal connections with people about this, though, and which I absolutely love. It means the world to me. And in fact, you know, there are some people that I work with that read my stories or my novels that have told me, you know, I actually had one lady say, you know, I tried to read Whispers in the Shadows, which is a novel, only it was a little too much for me. I didn't like the subject matter, so I couldn't keep reading. Is that okay? And I said, yeah, that's perfectly fine. You know, I really appreciate you telling me that because, you know, it's a good mental note for me on how people are reacting. But, and then when I released The Flutter of Darkness, you may not think this is so funny, but two of the gals I work with had finally got to The Life of Pets, which I was kind of dreading because it's pretty brutal. And they actually told me, they were like, yeah, we didn't know if we still wanted to work here after reading that.
Oh!
It got under your skin. It made you think about something.
Yeah.
But a lot of my stories are, I really want people to think about life through somebody else's eyes, and not necessarily someone who you identify with, someone who believes things that are different than you.
Right.
And so when somebody tells me, yeah, you really made me think about that differently, that to me is a big win, because, I'm not out to change people's minds about anything. I just want to, I want to stoke the fire. I want to get the flames burning, so we're all learning and disseminating more knowledge. And so those kind of things are really special to me. I've had people, hug me and tell me they love my books. And I mean, that's just, not any time in the last few months, of course. but that's a really special thing, I think, for any author, just to know that somebody read your book and loved it. That is just the best darn feeling there is, I think.
Yeah.
There's a story I'm searching for forever. And I found it, you and I were talking the other day about Katherine Hudson and about the Sleepwater Beat and her stories. And I found, as I was reading this particular one, tell me a little bit about how this one got started for you. It's a really, really powerful story. Just share a little bit about this one.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so Searching for Forever has got to be kind of the outlier in this collection, where it's not really horror at all. In my head, anyway, it's not.
Mm-hmm. It's not.
It is about a young neurodivergent girl. Which is she's a girl that could be somewhere on the autism spectrum, maybe. And so she has some learning issues. She has some social anxiety issues with fitting in with societal norms. And in this story, she has a place that brings her great happiness. And mm-hmm. it's this garden that her father has made for her. And she sits in the garden and she reads and she enjoys her, her young fantasy books. And it's a very special time for her. But unfortunately, the real world, has to keep moving around her. And she's getting to an age where she needs to be schooled and where her life has to change. And so her parents decide to make some drastic decisions that will ultimately end up eliminating this special place for her. And it is absolutely crushing for her. I mean, it is devastating. And as I wrote it, I kid you not, I was crying my eyes out because I didn't know what I was going to do with the story when I first started it. I had this idea of this little girl reading in a garden on this big wooden stump that was kind of carved out and smooth. And that's the picture I had. That was the butterfly.
Yeah, yeah,
And as I did this, it absolutely crushed my heart, the things that she was going through. And I was like, wow, I feel like even though this came out of my head, I'm kind of looking at the world a little differently now. And I have a lot more empathy and understanding for people who may not be going through life the same way I do. So that they may sound like I'm a little full of myself, but it was touching for me to write it. So I really hope that it's touching for people to read it.
Well, in this story, she talks about books being, taking her away into 100, this is actually from the book, into 100 magical lands, or maybe she would be all in all of them at the same time. And she felt kind of like Wendy Darling, of course, from Peter Pan, only she wasn't looking for Neverland. She was looking for an even more fantastic place. She was searching for forever. Oh, my gosh. That is such a powerful. That's what we readers are. That's what, when we escape into the lands that you all you magical wizards of words, that's what we're looking for.
of course we are. Of course we are looking. We're looking for that escape. But you mentioned Katherine Hudson, and I won't get into it too much. Katherine knows I love her, but I want to give a big shout out to Katherine Hudson and her Sleepwater Beat and Sleepwater Static, two absolutely phenomenal novels. And so it's they're the kind of books where they do just that. If you're looking to escape, they take you away. And I think that is the greatest gift that we as authors can give a reader, is to offer them a little bit of escape. Because God, we all want that so badly. You know, we live in a society where most of us aren't filling our days looking for how we are going to survive. You know, we're not in that era of the planet anymore, at least for most of us. But we are looking for something to enrich us. And so that's what authors can give us. That's what any kind of content creator can give us. That's what radio shows give us, you know, ways to enrich us and entertain us. And I think that is a very noble calling.
Yeah. Richard, it's over to you now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I was going to bring up, it looks like it's a book you're re-releasing next month. It looks like a second edition of, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Pathesis.
Very close.
And you are hitting a subject that is somewhat uncomfortable for me, because I do not like spiders.
No, I don't either.
I will gladly take a thermonuclear bomb to blow up one spider and call it good. So I was reading the description of it, and without trying to give away too much, it really looks like you have created, to me, a written version of some of the old 1950s horror films, when you got the giant spiders just eating everybody in sight. So what brought that concept, you know, to life? Because it does sound like a very fascinating book.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will tell you, you know, there aren't any giant man eating spiders in there. Although
okay.
I wish there were, because that's fantastic. There's no eight-legged freaks. You know, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to epidemiology and microbiology, and the study of bugs and arachnids and all these, you know, cool arthropods that are out there. And so I'm always really fascinated by that stuff. And when I read, a lot of times I'm reading nonfiction and I'm just being really nerdy about it. But so I wanted to take some of that idea and put it into kind of a fun action thriller. But of course, everything I write has to be a little dark and twisted. So I was like, well, how can I really torture the people of North America good and hard, while adding a little bit of science and a little bit of thrills to it? And that's how I came up with the idea for Pathesis. And what pathesis means is, and it's actually a term that's no longer used, it's obsolete. A pathesis is a state of sickness. And I'm basically the series, because it's going to be multiple books, is that, you know, our planet is sick. You know, it's sick with a lot of things, but a big part of it is humans, because we've done a lot to harm this planet. And so I am trying to very slowly, over the course of this series, let the planet try to reclaim itself and see how humanity responds. So the first wave of this comes in the form of, you know, as you could guess from the cover of the book, spiders. And it's not the way you think. It's not because they're leaping, you know, off of mountains and devouring people whole. It's because they're carrying a pathogen. And as we've all learned, you know, in recent months, that pathogens are very serious, very dangerous things, and they can spread quickly. And so this book was written long before COVID-19. It's very apt that it's being re-released now. I'm like, oh, well, this is maybe bad timing, or maybe great
or
timing.
Not.
Good or timing. Not. You
know. Right.
Yeah, it's always a little spooky as a writer when you write a piece of fiction, and within a couple of years, you start seeing it actually happening in real life. Because then you start, you get a little nervous, because you don't want what you've written after that to start coming true. Because you know, in my case, I usually make things worse. So, you know, let us hope that this remains in the realm of fiction. Because, like I said, me and spiders don't like each other.
They're coming for you first, buddy.
They already took their shot, so I owe them a shot back.
Okay, we're going to take another very quick break, gentlemen, and then we're going to get right back to it. But here is a really cool some information. There is a new bookshop online, and it's calling you. To all our readers, authors, and publishers out there, there's a new place to purchase books by your favorite authors and, at the same time, support independent booksellers in your own town or nationwide. And it's easy to become an affiliate, creating your own annex to highlight your favorite genres and authors. Here's all you need to do. Go to www.bookshop.org to shop. And be a hero to independent booksellers, or do like we did at Out West and set up your own affiliate bookshop page. Check out ours at www.bookshop.org/shop. Lot to remember, /Out West Shop. And you'll find the writer's block, featured authors and titles, as well as personal favorites in categories like tools for writers, historical fiction, romance, sci-fi, biography, history, film, cooking, and more. And it's always a great day out west with these four simple steps to support authors and booksellers. Shop, open package, read, and repeat. And we're back with Richard Paulinelli and Jason Laval, and Richard, do you want to ask him our famous question?
I get to ask the question this time, right? Yes, because we don't warn people that we're going to do this. So Jason, the question of the hour is, do you ever get writer's block? And if you are afflicted with that vile curse, what do you do to get rid of it?
Question that we all dread. Some of us don't believe writer's block exists. Some of us are plagued by it. I don't necessarily get writer's block. What I get is I get, you know, a lot of anxiety or depression. You know, and again, that's just my brain that's kind of fighting against me. And a lot of times it'll start to happen when I'm about 3/4 of the way through a novel or short story, even if it's only a few pages long, and I'll get to where I can actually taste the ending, and then something about me freezes up inside. I'll know what's supposed to happen. I'll know what I need to write, so I'm not blocked, but it's like a part of me is rebelling against this idea of actually finishing a project. It's a really strange thing, and it's kind of, I liken it to this. So You're a kid, you're in your messy room that you haven't cleaned in weeks, and you finally decide, okay, well, I'm going to pick up some of this junk that's on my floor. I'm actually going to start doing some of the work. But then your mom yells in there, hey, Jason, clean your room today. And all of a sudden you're like, no. Well, if I'm supposed to do it, I'm not going to do it. So I think that my mind is telling me that, you know, when I get to that point where I know I can finish it, I'm like, okay, you know, just push through, Jason, we got this. All of a sudden, he puts the brakes on and says, no, you're not going to do it. But one thing that I found that helps is that, you know, there are some people online and groups online, writers and publishers that will host little writing sprints where, you know, at 3 p.m., we're going to write for 20 minutes straight as fast as we can. And it sounds so silly and goofy, but every once in a while, I'll see one of those pop up on social media and I'll say, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm just going to sit down and write for 20 minutes straight. And that might be the first time I've written all week or all month. And all of a sudden, you're writing again and the ideas are flowing. And then you can sit down later and you can do another 20 minutes or another 40 minutes. And sometimes it just takes getting a few words out to actually get the juices flowing again.
Wow. That's a different, I think, Richard, that's a different answer than another new answer than we've had before.
You know, the writers that we've talked to over the years, I mean, everybody has their, you know, different degrees of, no, I've never had it, or yeah, I've had it. And then how they approach it and deal with it, which just kind of tells you there's no one real way to write. So don't, you know, people who say, well, you got to write this way or you got to write that way. No. Do what works for you, whether it's writing or getting around writer's block, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. You know, one of my favorite authors, Victoria Schwab, you know, she's posted that several times. There is no right way to write. You know, we all have a system, and for, you know, like my friend Katie, she writes 1,000 words every night. That's her system. I don't write like that. You know, I'm more of a, you know, there'll be one Sunday, the idea comes up, and I'll write maybe 3,000 words, and then I might not write again for a little while. But, yeah, you know, we all do it differently.
Now, you've written short stories and full novels. What do you have a preference, or do you just kind of, as you're laying it out, you decide, okay, I can make this work to a full length, or this just needs to be a short?
Oh, another great question. So what I love about the short stories is they really suit my my personality and the way my brain works, because I do have such an issue with attention and anxiety, it's sometimes difficult for me to commit to a project that's going to take me a year to do. That being said, I absolutely love writing novels because I love being able to really develop a character and mm-hmm. a plot line. And that's something that you don't get the opportunity to do in a short story. With a short story, it's really a lot of flashbang. You know, you're trying to hit people with things that are going to cause the most impact as quickly as possible, so that the short story doesn't fall flat. But with a novel, you know, you've got, you know, 80 to 100,000 words to really to draw that out and develop it and make it, turn it into a beautiful thing. So, you know, I can't say that I like one of them better than the other. It's definitely easier for me to write short stories. You know, if I laid here long enough in this hammock in the dark, I would come up with a cool little plot to write a story about, and that would be cool. But, you know, like I have a novel I've been working on for 6 months, and it's going to take me another year to finish it probably. So mm-hmm. you know, yeah. it's a matter of commitment and what you're able to take on, you know, and I'm a big believer now in not biting off more than I can chew, because it's just going to cause me a lot of pain later on.
Yeah. Yeah. Most short stories are in the 5 to 10,000 word range. And people are like, well, that seems like a lot of words. And it is, right until you start writing. And all of a sudden you're in that 5 to 10 and you're nowhere near the end of your story. So, you know, it is very yep. hard to develop a story and get your characters developed enough for people to connect with in that short time frame. So it's definitely a challenge.
Well, and there's another aspect to it, too, that you know, people who don't write wouldn't realize, is that if you're writing a particularly heavy subject matter, like I did with Searching for Forever or The Life of Pets, you know, I may have wanted to make those longer pieces, but I couldn't keep myself in that space any longer without mm-hmm. it being bad for me. I was like, okay, well, I've got to get out of this space because this is dark. It's not good for me to live in this space. You know, I need to wrap this up and move on to something that's not quite as traumatic.
Yeah, I think every writer goes through that from time to time. They'll hit on a story idea and it's just so dark and you know, wrong in a way that they just, as soon as they can get it over with and get to something else, the better.
Yes,
gentlemen, that sure. sounds like a good place to stop again. We've got one more. Ronan, why don't you do a little bit about Creative Edge?
You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services.
And we're back speaking with Jason Lavelle and Richard Polinelli. And gentlemen, now I have a question about radio, because you both host radio shows. You're both authors. And why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe, Jason, why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about the show that you're involved in and how it is to be a host and put that show together.
I would love to. I host several shows. I host Spilling Ink, which is an author roundtable show. Basically, authors just kind of getting together and having a good time. I host The Raven, which is a little bit more in-depth literary type show where we'll do a reading from a novel or a short story and then get in-depth about that story with the author, which is a lot of fun. I also host Unafraid, which is a podcast that shares stories from the LGBTQ plus community. So I'm involved in a lot of shows. I really enjoy it a great deal. But I'll tell you what, being the best part of being a host, bar none, is just being able to meet such a variety of people. And I'm sure that's what all hosts say, but it really is, because with every person that we interview or laugh with or, you know, share an online beer with, whatever we're doing, you know, we're learning from them. And it's again, it's providing us with that enrichment. And I think it's that enrichment that really makes us better humans. So that's bar none my favorite thing, is just getting to learn from all the people that I meet, and especially when they're nothing like me, because then I'm like, oh wow, I've had this totally new viewpoint that I get to chew on and digest a little bit, and maybe even add you into a story if I don't like you.
hey, don't be giving away our secrets.
Behavior, yeah. Richard, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing on radio?
Well, my podcast started last year. It was A Scribe's Journey, and at the end of last year, decided to kind of tighten the focus, and we changed it to Voyages of a Sci-Fi Scribe. And unfortunately, the show went on hiatus because the long story short is I got hit in the face with shingles, and I couldn't wear a headset. So now that I can finally put a headset on and not be screaming nonstop, we're gonna be starting it back up again. But I agree with Jason on the fact that the greatest thing I've gotten from this is meeting these authors that I had never heard of before, hearing their stories. There's an author down in South America that was on my show who is a travel writer, and she is legally blind. And she writes these incredible pieces on the places she goes, and you wouldn't know that she has sight problems. And she's slowly getting to the point where she's not going to be able to see at all. So she's doing all these trips and getting everything on paper while she can. And it was just an amazing hour that I just kind of shut up, which is, you know, a feat in itself, and just got out of her way and just let her talk about everything. So that's really the thing that helps me the most is meeting these new authors and finding out what their experiences are. But in a way, we're also, Jason and I as hosts, we're helping introduce these authors to people who also hadn't heard of them before. And we're helping spread the word about the books that they're writing, the stories that they're telling, why you want to go read that story and want to read more from this person as they continue their journey. So I think that's just the great thing about these kinds of shows, like The Writer's Block. We're meeting people and getting these perspectives that we normally wouldn't. And it just makes us better writers at the end of the day.
Is there any guidance that y'all would give to an author that would like to get on an author show, or how to prepare once they've been booked for an author show?
Oh, yeah.
She hit us with a good one.
Yeah, that is a pretty good one there. I'll tell you what, I know so many people in the business now that I don't think about that very often, but I'll tell you what, you know, if you... having a publicist really, really helps. Just a few minutes ago, you mentioned Creative Edge Publicity, and Creative Edge has been a wonderful company. They represent me as well. And, you know, Mickey can just kind of connect you with all these different podcasts and radio shows and different media outlets. And it's really a cool thing. You know, and it's something that, you know, you can manage on your own. It takes a bit of time and a lot of searching to find the right show for you. So if you're searching for, you know, I want a, you know, podcast about fantasy fiction,
you know, kind of thing. And then, you know, looking for results and looking for what's right for you. And you can do that. It's a lot of work, though. And so that's why having a publicist is, it's been really helpful for me, for sure.
Yeah. And if you can't afford a publicist, or you just don't want to go that route, it's like Jason said, search for podcasts like ours. If you're a sci-fi fantasy writer, you know, you come knock on my door, find the one that fits what you're doing, and then jump in there and contact them. And most of them are looking for people to bring on the show. So you're probably got a really good chance of getting on.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, and I was just going to say, you know, Richard's absolutely right. We're all very friendly people. Don't ever be intimidated by, show hosts or podcasters, because we're all pretty friendly people. You know, so you reach out to Richard, you know, reach out to Spilling Ink. You know, we'll always get you on whenever we can. That's the biggest thing, is just, you know, don't be afraid to ask. Don't be afraid to, you know, because we're going to say yes. It might take us a little while to schedule you, but we'll say yes.
All right. Now I'm looking at that clock on the wall, and I know we need to start wrapping up. So Richard, do you have one quick tip for a new writer? And then how do we find you?
I'm going to answer the easy part first. Just go to www.scifiscribe.com or TuscanyBayBooks.com, and you will find me all over the place there. As far as a tip to a new writer, I'm going to go with my basic response to that is write as much as you can, when you can. Do not be afraid to put your work out there. Do not get discouraged if someone does not like it. If you get a bad review or a rejection letter from a publisher, that's just one more brick in the road of your journey to becoming a writer. We have all collected way too many of those over the years. But never give up on yourself. Never give up on your writing. Do not deprive us of your voice, because we need as many of them as we can get.
Oh, that's so good. Okay, Jason, you're up next. How about a tip or two for writers, and then all the places we can find you?
Definitely. I'll try to be quick, because I actually have two tips for writers. So where you can find me is at www.jnlavelle.com, or get onto Facebook or Twitter and search for Jason Lavelle. You'll find me, connect with me. I'm really easygoing. I'd love to chat. So tips for writers. One, and this is for, you know, if you're looking at how do I start a novel, how do I start writing this? I always say start with one scene. Take your character and describe one character doing something. It doesn't have to be anything fantastic. It can be as simple as, you know, Jason met Richard for a cup of coffee. And in describing that scene, in describing their interaction, you're going to get to know that character, their voice, your voice, and it's going to allow you to continue. So that's how I always suggest to people that they actually start writing a novel, is just one scene. And then my other tip is to get out there and try to meet people that aren't like you, or read about people that aren't like you, and try to understand them. It's not about accepting everyone. It's about understanding them, because once you understand someone's motivations, even if that someone you view as your enemy, you know, say, you know, if we want to be extra dramatic, once you understand their motivations, you'll understand how to write a character better, because everyone has different motivations, and it's all about perspective.
That's so good. Okay, I have one last question for each of you. And then Ronan, I know we got to be ready to take us out. So the question to you, Richard, is there a stack of books or ebooks that you're anxious to get to, and what's at the top of the stack you haven't read yet or you want to reread?
Actually, there's a book coming out, and I hope I'm not blowing it by saying this, but Jack McDivitt is one of my favorite sci-fi writers, and I credit him for motivating me to come back and try to get back into fiction writing about 8 years ago. He's got the next book in the Alex Benedict series is supposedly coming soon, and as soon as that that thing hits Amazon, I'm shutting down whatever I'm doing and I'm going to read it cover to cover, because he writes an amazing series there. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Oh, that's great. Okay. And the same question to you, Jason. Do I need to repeat the question?
No, I've got it for you. You know, actually I just started an audiobook that I'm very excited about, and I feel ashamed that I can't tell you the author's name. I think it's Kirsten or Kristen, but the book is titled As I Darken, and ooh, it is, oh my goodness, it is incredible. It is, if you picture the story of Vlad the Impaler, only it's a gender-bent version. So we're seeing young Vlad grow up, only it's a female character, and it is just vicious and ruthless and absolutely enthralling. It's a young adult book, but it kind of reads a lot more like a Game of Thrones.
Wow.
Kirsten White, by any chance?
Kirsten White, that sounds right.
Okay.
Wow.
I just added another book to my growing stack. Thank you, Jason.
Exactly. Well, we've just had a wonderful time this evening. Again, our guest, featured guest tonight was Jason Lavelle. And if you want to look him up, the last name is spelled capital L-A, capital V, as in Victor, E-L-L-E. And then Richard Polinelli, a good buddy. So fun to have you sitting in the co-host chair with me again, Richard. We want to send out our love to Jim Christina and look forward to having him back in the studio. And again, celebrating our fifth anniversary, we want to thank all of you that listen. And we know you listen around the world. You've got lots of choices of places to listen. Thank you for tuning in to the Writer's Block on LA Talk Radio. And let's see, what does our host normally say, Richard? And Ronan, are you ready? We are out of here. See you next week.
See ya.